Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With a heap of moldering bones, the complete skeleton of a small human being, shut tight in an oaken chest in an abandoned and decaying log house.
We should start with a recap.
Okay, the recap.
A brief recap.
Okay.
So we're talking about Jenny Beam, who was a not quite
2-year-old,
who disappeared on July 28th, 1925. And we talked about how you found out about Jenny.
Yeah, based on the memorial card that my friend had purchased.
And what we didn't talk about, which was pretty neat, is the area she purchased it was not very far from where Jenny lived.
Yeah, and I think that probably has something to do with the fact that the person who had received this memorial card and the bulk of the other cards in the lot that she got was a relative of Jenny's.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Were you able to...
Yeah.
Genealogical detective work there. Mm-hmm.
So I imagine nearly everyone that I've researched so far has stayed in that area.
And we talked about Jenny's family a little bit.
Yeah.
At the time, she had 2 older sisters.
Yep. And a mother and a father who worked on a farm. And she was lost in a fairly rural area.
Yeah, we talked about the area where she lived.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, I mean, once again, the state is beautiful rural area in the mountains of Berks County.
Very small place.
In terms of population. And
yeah, and also potential traffic in 1925.
Exactly.
One of those small sort of insular areas where everyone's related to one another, and it's either very simple to keep secrets or very difficult.
Yeah. And we talked about the few details we do know about Jenny's disappearance, where she was seen last. She was seen along the road.
Mm-hmm. So we know going into this, because it's a memorial card, that even though the search starts that Tuesday, that eventually there's going to be...
Yeah, I think everybody understands.
It doesn't end well.
It's not a happy ending to the story we're going to hear. I'm not sure if any of the articles we presented last time mentioned the well.
I don't know if it was one we presented or not, but that was one of the places that they were searching, and we actually found a well, which was like, I'd say, what, less than a mile from her house?
Oh.
Maybe a half mile?
Yeah, half mile, I think.
At most.
Yeah.
And it was very obviously an old well, because it was
old
made
well,
out of the
it
same...
was big.
Yeah.
Like most of the wells you see, like we had a hand-dug well in the farm where I grew up, and... It was not that big.
I wonder if this was to serve the entire town, like if people went to get fresh water there.
Possibly.
For a long time.
But the well's still there. We saw it.
Yeah.
We could have walked up to it if we wanted.
I mean, that, I think to me, that would be like one of the first places I would check. And maybe just from, you know, growing up in the 80s, you know, when we thought kids getting stuck in wells were a distinct possibility.
It happened.
Yeah.
And we left off with this sort of cliffhanger.
Yeah, right? Like, this is the thing I thought, like, I'm not a cop in 1925, but when they said, oh, this is the second mysterious disappearance of a child from this household in the past few years, to me, that would be, like, a major clue, right?
And that was this boy named Floyd Hollenbaum.
So he was staying with the Beam family. He was a neighbor of sorts. He must have known them in some capacity and was staying there.
And they took him in, basically.
Yeah, they took him in. He didn't have a great family situation, so we'll go into that a little bit more.
But he went missing from the Beam home.
In the middle of the night and was never heard from again, according to the article.
According to the article. Well, let's play the articles.
Okay.
Child missing at Evansville. County detective is called to scene. Search continues. The residents of Evansville, the cement manufacturing center of Berks County, are much wrought up over the mysterious disappearance of 10-year-old Floyd Hollenbaum from his home that place Sunday morning. The lad was sent on an errand about 10 o'clock in the morning to Moldtown, a short distance away, by his parents to make several purchases at a store, and was given a basket to carry his packages in. He failed to return at the usual time when making this trip, which is several times a week, when the family became apprehensive and started out on a search for the boy. They found the basket along the road between Evansville and Moldtown, and learned later that the lad never reached his destination. County Detective Joel Crick was notified, and immediately started out the search for the missing child, and the police were given a good description of the boy, but up to an early hour this morning, no trace of him could be found. There is a large foreign population in the vicinity of Evansville who are mostly employed at the cement works there, and Detective Crick searched every home, but could find no clue to the child's whereabouts. The search will be continued today.
Play right side.
So it was the article we played at the end of episode one that said he disappeared and was never heard from again.
Yeah.
The article we just played just says he disappeared. That was the original article. Mm-hmm. But he was heard from again.
Yeah.
Before the Jenny Beam situation, he was heard from again.
A few months previous. But I think it's probably better to go back and kind of talk a little bit about his entire family situation and how this wasn't the first time, or the second time, or even the third time he escaped from his living situation.
So, who was Floyd Hollenbaum?
He was a boy who was born into a family. According to the census records, he was the seventh child, the fourth living of Cora and Henry Hollenbaum. His mother died when he was quite young. He and his siblings at various times were sent to live with aunts and uncles. For a time when he's 10 years old, he serves as a servant in someone's house.
At 10,
yeah. And this is the thing that I think is probably the most crucial part of this. his sister, who was about 19 at the time, and I think the quote is something like this, proffers a charge against her father for which he served several years in jail.
Ooh.
And
so this makes my joke I wanted to do very awkward. I was going to ask you if there were indeed any Holland Back girls.
There were, yes.
So she was a Holland Back girl.
Yes, he had three older sisters.
It would be inaccurate to say there ain't no Holland Back girls.
No, there were. Okay. And
I'm sorry for that, everyone. No, not to make light of that. She filed a charge against her father.
Yeah, it's unclear what the particular nature of it is, but other articles talk about his angry nature or his abusive nature. I don't know what the nature of the abuse is or what the nature of the charge was, but he did spend at least two years in the Berks County Jail.
So he went to jail. See, this is important to point out. Mm-hmm. You could really beat the stuffing out of your kids in 1925 and not
yeah, this was 1919, I think, is when he went
okay.
to jail. Yeah.
Well, so in the early 1900s.
Yeah, it was fine to abuse your children.
You could beat the heck out of your kids and mm-hmm. not get in trouble for it. Your kids could show up to school with bruises and broken bones, even, mm-hmm. and you wouldn't get in trouble for it because spare the rod, spoil the child. It mm-hmm. was just the way things were. Mm-hmm. Whatever he did must have been pretty bad.
And he pled guilty to it.
He pled guilty to it. Wow. Mm.
So it must have been some sort of overwhelming evidence. There's an article about Floyd when he's about 10 years old. I'm not sure if at this time he's working for someone else or he's at a friend's house or whatever, but he just disappears on. He has a job he's supposed to be doing at this point in time. I don't know if it's errands for his family or what, but he just disappears. Mm-hmm. He runs away.
This is before he was with the Beams.
Yes, when he's about 10 years old. And there's a police report. They're looking for him. They describe him, and then they eventually find him at a neighbor's home. My suspicion is this happened a lot. He's trying to get away from the situation he was in.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a great family life.
No. He's separated from his siblings. They're not staying in the same place he is. He has no stability.
Wow.
And then the very curious thing is that the last that we hear of Floyd, not in relation to the Beam family, but just generally what I was able to find, he didn't just disappear in the night. He went somewhere where I don't know. But the last thing that we found in the paper is an article that he's in jail, in the local jail, and someone helps him escape. His father was supposed to come and get him out of jail when he's 15. And when they get there, someone has let him out.
Is that the article we have? About
yes, that's the last article. That happens 2 months before Jenny goes missing.
Okay, we'll play that article here. Okay.
Runaway youth is at large. Police of entire section asked to be on lookout for missing lad. Police of Mount Carmel, as well as police departments throughout the entire section, were asked by Danville Police Force to be on the lookout for 15-year-old Floyd Hollenbach of Blandon near Reading, who escaped from the jail at Danville in a mysterious manner. The runaway boy was being held there pending the arrival of his father. When Chief Mincemoyer went to the jail, he found everything orderly, but when he arrived at the youth's cell, he was missing. The general opinion is that someone not in authority has a key to the jail and allowed the youngster his freedom. Floyd weighs about 90 pounds, is about 5 feet tall, and is attired in a heavy gray suit. He wore knicker stockings and brown shoes. He has light hair, round smooth face, and clear skin, and is of German descent.
It's so dear, mine moon to shine through the pines while snowhawk sleeps. Let us creep through the veil, your cowboy lover, your heart will cover. Don't hesitate, it is late, ponies wait for you and me by the tree in the dale. Here's Tom-Tom beating, let's hit the trail. My pretty snow dear, say you will go dear, heart. Every trail leads to your
heart. At one point, he's living with his aunt and uncle, and that's the last that I can find of him conclusively. And that's the 1930 census.
It's interesting, though, that the paper says he was never heard from again. That's after the article that has him escaping from jail. Do we know what he was in jail for?
No. And he was only 15. He was in the Danville jail awaiting being picked up by his father, and someone had a key and let him out.
Let him out.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was someone who felt sympathetic towards his release to his father and got him out, or if his father had some sort of connection since he had his own criminal past and someone helped him out. My suspicion is not with Floyd.
Meaning you don't think he's involved in Jenny's disappearance?
I don't know. I don't know conclusively. I mean, everything is purely speculation.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but I would say if we're just thinking a bit about people who had a potential relation to the family and a history of violence, I don't know that it would be Floyd that I would look to. Maybe perhaps his father.
This is a question without an answer, but
yeah.
How well did his father know the Beams?
Yeah, and was there some sort of animosity over their having kind of spirited him away and taken care of him?
Right.
Was there animosity there? Did they have some kind of dealings on a financial level? Or?
So I remember initially, like when you had found the Floyd Hollenbach story,
mm-hmm.
I think there was some suspicion on your part that he, since he escaped jail a few months before, that maybe he had come back for Jenny.
Yeah, and there could be that element, and maybe this whole like disappearance in the night thing was a story that the Beams made to save face for him, and maybe they told him to leave because of they didn't like something that was going on within their family.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, this is all purely speculation.
Complete speculation.
Yeah, and I want to maintain that these people are, even in the past, entirely innocent. I'm just trying to figure out why someone would do this to a little girl.
Right. I mean, we're just naming possible things. We don't know.
And there's just a lot of things that either don't add up or are just too coincidental to overlook.
Mysteries within mysteries. And that's what makes this story really compelling, I think. Even though at the end of this, at the end of these episodes, we're not going to have an answer.
Yeah, I think this is like in the same way. I don't know if anybody else had listened to the first season of Serial. I think everyone was hoping for this grand finale where they find the subject of that either entirely innocent or entirely guilty, or they know who the secret real murderer is, and it just didn't have that kind of resolution. And that's the way real life works.
It is, yeah. And this, especially with this case being so cold. I mean, this is a very, very cold case.
Yeah.
This, you know, 1925, right?
Yeah. I don't think that it's impossible, though.
No, and like you said, you know, somebody knows or knew.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible somebody took the information to their grave with them.
I still think it's entirely possible that one of the theories that the police had, that somebody had accidentally hit her and panicked and didn't know what to do.
I mean, it's possible.
Yeah.
It's certainly possible.
But I don't think we talked too much about what happened when she supposedly died, which wasn't the day of, you know, that she went missing, if that was the day of an accident.
Well, let's put a pin in that.
Okay.
Floyd Hollenbach, we don't know much about his character,
mm-hmm.
his attitude, his behavior. We don't know why he was in jail at 15, was it?
Yeah. He could have been in jail for something entirely benign, like running away from wherever
just being an itinerant.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes back then you could be thrown in jail. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm writing my Wild Man books, and I come across a lot of wild men that are in no way, shape, or form Bigfoot. They're just normal people, itinerants, mountain men, whatever. A lot of them end up in jail just because the law doesn't like the way they look, or they don't like the idea that there's a homeless guy around.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them, they'll take him in, they'll cut their hair, shave him against their will, and put him in jail for, you know, whatever, the disturbing the peace or whatever. I don't even think they had to come up with charges, honestly, back then. They just did what they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he could have been in jail for that reason. So we don't know much about Floyd's character. We hope he was a nice young man that was had a horrible home life. Mm-hmm. We don't know. We hope that's all it was. But we do know his father was not a nice guy. Like, we can say that about his father.
Yeah, I mean, that's even written in the papers.
Right.
He was a violent man.
Right. You know, a violent guy who spent time in jail, who copped to whatever charge was awful enough to land him in jail for 2 years mm-hmm. with his own kids. He was in a proximity to this family.
Yes, he has a relationship.
So,
My thought is that if they took him in, they knew that family.
Right. Right, most probably. While we feel badly about saying, like, oh, did Floyd do anything? I don't think we have to feel too bad about saying, did Floyd's father do something?
Mm-hmm. And Floyd's father actually is very traceable and was easy to find and died in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Floyd, however, I cannot find past the 1930 census. I don't know if he died, if he started going by a different name. Nor one of his sisters can I find. Nor can I find evidence of the first three children of theirs who probably died in either infancy or...
What year census was that?
The 1930 census is the last one I can find him in. So 5 years after Jenny dies.
So after 1930, there ain't no Hollenbeck girls.
Well, the girls are still there, but Floyd is impossible
to
find.
I'm trying to make this work and it's just not working.
No, it's a bit of a stretch.
Okay, I'm going to stop with that. Thanks for listening to Strange Familiars. I hope everybody's been enjoying The Broken Circle. These episodes are a little bit different from what we normally do, but we try to bring you different stuff all the time, whether it's on-site recordings or interviews with authors or paranormal investigators or witnesses to the paranormal. We try to mix it up and do different stuff. If you like what we do and you want to help us continue to make Strange Familiars, please consider becoming a patron. Go to patreon.com/strangefamiliars. $3 a month gets you full extra episodes of Strange Familiars. We've been trying to do 2 full episodes a month for our patrons, but we do at least one full episode every month for our patrons. So lots of extra content. And besides that, you can get things like t-shirts, stickers, and more. There's different reward levels there, depending on what level of support you can afford to give. Our patrons make Strange Familiars possible. Without our patrons, we would not be able to make the show at all. So thank you, patrons. Thank you for supporting the show. And once again, if you'd like to help, go to patreon.com/strangefamiliars. We must stress again what a small town this is, even today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's likely doubled, if not quadrupled, in size today from what it was then. So at the time, super small town. Very, very small town. As far as we know, the police are not making any connections to this Hollenbeck disappearance.
No, I mean, they just sort of offhandedly mention this.
The newspaper mentions it.
Yeah.
The police never bring it up, to our knowledge.
No, they start questioning, like, the most absurd, you know, like, they immediately go to the...
The gypsy theory.
The gypsy theory. They also don't seem to question... They say they're questioning an older woman, but they don't mention who she is.
Mm-hmm.
They also say they're questioning... I think I mentioned this before. There's a boy who says he saw her after the little girl saw her.
Right.
Around noon. It doesn't really jive with...
He mentions that he saw her further along, like up by another field, right? Like,
this isn't
the kid who saw her out of the back window.
No, because that was a 5-year-old girl. This is a 12-year-old boy.
And like you said, at this point, this is the biggest news in town.
Yeah,
is this kid just chiming in?
Oh, yeah, I saw her too.
We don't really know.
I don't put a lot of stock in his... I mean, you know, to me, nowadays, he'd be on a list of people that were kind of suspicious.
Right.
You're the last person to see her.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think that, to me, I think that if there was any credence to it, he either saw someone similar or he just wanted to be in on the story. I'd say, though, the whole Floyd mystery is not the weirdest thing in the paper being reported at
that time. Well, it's not, and I was going to get to that, because was it just bad small-town policing, or was it this, like, primitive, they didn't have a good idea, they didn't think of policing the way modern policing does to make these connections and so forth, or were they doing it, and we don't know about it? You know?
Yeah, I don't really know what they investigated. We have no way of...
Because there's something else.
That happens the same week that Jenny goes missing.
And it's less than 10 miles away.
Yeah.
Human bones discovered in old chest. Deserted Burke's log house yields clue to 20-year-old tragedy, police believe. With a heap of moldering bones, the complete skeleton of a small human being, shut tight in an oaken chest in an abandoned and decaying log house as their starting point, state police last night undertook the explanation of a tragedy at least two decades old, which may rival in gruesome thrills the tales of fictionary mystery. The house is several miles above Clinesville. So frightened were the four hunters who discovered the chest and its horrid secret 3 weeks ago that they agreed to say nothing of the find. One of them broke silence yesterday evening and told his story. "There were four of us," Harry Keller of Walnut Town told State Trooper William Burgoon last night. "We found it and it scared us, and we said it couldn't do any good to go poking around old things up that had been hidden 20 years. The four, Paul Moat, Frank Stufflett, Frank Knoll, and Keller, all of Walnut Town, were hunting groundhogs 3 weeks ago when they wandered to a log house, high in the mountains and deep in the forest, some distance from the farm of Edward Motts. They shot groundhogs in the stone-walled basement of the cabin, and growing curious, Stufflett and Keller trusted their weight on the rotting stairways. "There were three chests upstairs," said Keller last night. "Two were empty, and the third, painted red and with a heavy lid underneath, which was a layer of wallpaper, we found a heap of rotted clothes and then a skeleton. We ran away." Mutt and Knoll, attracted by the cries of their companions, made a quick search of the attic and found an envelope addressed to Edward J. Wink, Kempton, RFD No. 1. The envelope bore the postmark of 1905. Whether a man named Wink ever inhabited the cabin in the woods, Burgoon had not been able to learn last night. Believed to be skeleton of child. According to the hunters, the skeleton was about 2 feet long, but whether this was its actual length, indicating it to be that of a very young child, or whether it had so been placed in the chest that it appeared much shorter than the individual to whom it belonged, Burgoon would not hazard a guess last night. He intends a complete investigation of the premises today, and then a careful canvass of the farmers of the vicinity, to learn all that he can of the life of the township 20 years ago. A small mystery attached itself to the case last night when Burgoon talked with Stufflett. The state troopers first learned of the discovery yesterday evening by telephone. The man who called the police barracks said he was Stufflett. Stufflett denied that he had telephoned the police and insisted Keller had done so. Keller, in his turn, denied the call. The state police wrote a lecture to the four for withholding knowledge of their discovery. "We have no theory of any kind yet," said Burgoon last night. "The skeleton may be that of a child or a small adult. We can determine that tomorrow and probably settle the question of the sex from the relative sizes of the bones. We have not had time to make any investigation of old mysteries. The possibilities of the find, according to Burgoon, range from the death of a child and a burial, neglected for some reason, to murder."
The way I found out about that article is looking for Jenny.
Right, you said it was proximity. The article was...
Right next to the article
right
about
the article about
no
Jenny.
One mentions the weirdness of
in the same week as Jenny's disappearance, these bones are found.
Well, they were found before, but that's when the hunters decided
right.
to reveal
well,
them. And they don't mention that they chose to come forward at this time because of Jenny, but I can't imagine there'd be any other reason. I'm thinking they thought if they revealed this now, they wouldn't be suspects if they revealed it later.
I don't know. The Jenny thing's very creepy and very, very sad because we know her name and you have the anguish of the mother and the father and their child's gone. But this is creepy. The skeleton in the cabin.
Mm-hmm.
They don't put an age on it. At sometimes they say a young child.
Sometimes they say a baby. Sometimes they say 3 years old.
There's these three chests in the upper floor of this cabin.
Yeah, of a hunting cabin that's depending on...
One's painted red.
Yeah.
It's very... That's very ritual-like, you know what I mean? So you got these three chests. There's three of them. One's painted red. They open it up.
Then they say there's like a layer of wallpaper
or something covering
this.
They lift that up and there's these bones of a child there. That's to me, that feels very, whether conscious or not, I'm not saying there was like a cult up there doing a ritual, but it feels like a kind of ritual thing. You know what I mean? Like someone put the bones in there and they painted that chest red. That was...
Or they chose out of the three chests, the red chest.
Or they chose the red chest. You know, it seems like a very, very kind of ritual thing to put these bones in.
And with both of these situations, I feel like if you were just trying to get away from a crime, they live in the middle of mountains where you could bury something and no one had the capacity to ever find any evidence of Jenny or this body.
And we mentioned several times that the swamp was only a few acres. It's not miles and miles of swamp. But if you went back in there and buried something down...
Oh, there's woods all over the place. Yeah. There's...
And the way that ground just sucks in with the moisture and stuff, you could put something in that ground and it would be gone.
Yeah, there would be... To me, the fact that someone chose to return Jenny to within a mile of her house...
Right. We're getting ahead of things there.
Okay.
No spoilers.
Or the fact that somebody saved these bones. Somebody saved this body.
In this cabin where people have not lived. I think they said for 5 years they interviewed the people.
Well,
there.
It depends. Some people say it's been a long time. Some people say they kind of remember recently. To me, I think it was probably more so a hunting camp than like a physical residence. That's why the hunter... I don't think the hunters had anything to do with it.
No, I don't think they
And do I either. Absolutely think because their stories are consistent. They each tell the same story, the same details.
Yeah.
And the fact that they admit a certain amount of vulnerability by talking about how they were scared to come forward.
Right.
And I don't even think... It doesn't appear in the articles that they were scared to come forward because they thought that they would get in trouble. It was almost like the whole thing scared them...
Yeah,
on a very personal level.
They were creeped out.
They were creeped out. And the fact that they went back and thought, oh, maybe we're being ridiculous. We should just go back. Because, you know, you could look at things first and, you know, the blanket on the floor looks like something different from what it is. And and you get in this sort of mindset of being scared. And they went back and they saw the same thing.
Right. They went twice. The second time, it was still there. This is so creepy. Whether someone was living there and that was their child and they decided to save it for some reason, which seems that's really bizarre behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Or someone deposited this in this abandoned cabin.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking there's some connection between whoever put that body there and the cabin itself.
Sure, yeah.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
So in the article, it talks about a letter to an Edward Wink that's on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked him up, and he's dead at the time that this happens. He dies in, like, 1913. So I checked his will, and his property passes to his son and his son-in-law. The trail kind of runs cold from there. I assume one or both of them owns that property. I don't know what they do with that particular house or if they have any connection to it at all.
This cabin is no longer there, right?
Because I think it was...
They said it was like Revolutionary
War. Yeah, they allude to it being, and there's nothing like that that's still...
Right, because we were going to go look for it, and then we kind of decided we're like, probably not going to be able to find
yeah.
it. Yeah. But they were very definite about the bones. The hunters said, then these are hunters, and hunters know what bones look like.
Yeah, that's what that made their story more...
They said not only did they see a skull, but they saw breastbones, mm-hmm. I believe, and they were very certain about it. I believe in one of the articles, I'm not sure if it's one of the ones that we'll present, but they're very certain about it. They're like, I know what I saw. This was bones, and it was human bones. And they print this story.
And they talk about it as if it's fact that they've already researched.
And the police go to retrieve the bone.
Skeleton vanishes from scene. But Walnut Town hunters insist they had seen it. State police investigate. The Clinesville skeleton has disappeared. No trace of the human bones, which four Walnut Town hunters still maintained they saw in an old chest on the second floor of an unoccupied log house near Clinesville, was found yesterday by State Trooper Joseph Logan. There was evidence, however, of the house having been visited by others since the reported discovery of a skeleton by the hunters 3 weeks ago. A letter dated July 16th, 1925, was found partly burned in the musty basement of the house. Police took possession of it. Has the skeleton been spirited away, or were the hunters mistaken? We are not mistaken, said Frank Knoll. We were there not once, but twice. It was there a week ago when we went for groundhogs again. So was the envelope, dated 1905. Search of the house failed to disclose the miss of yesterday. I'm sure it was the frame of a child, Frank Stufflet, another of the party, declared. You could see the breastbones in the chest. Oh, no, we didn't imagine it. What good would it do us to lie about such a thing? It looked like a baby skeleton. We were afraid when we saw it, but we came back last week and it was still there. Although found 3 weeks ago, all four of the men withheld reporting the find until Sunday, figuring it would do no good to dig up the old thing, not knowing what it was or who. They told Trooper Logan last night. It was their conversations with the neighbor storekeeper that brought it to the attention of the authorities. State Trooper Logan searched the entire house and nearby sheds yesterday afternoon. On the second floor of the log house, just as the four hunters described it, was the chest. Layers of dust, the accumulation of years, covered the top. Marks were visible, indicating it had been opened recently. Raising the lid, the trooper found a bit of a woman's blue and white striped apron and a patch of blue serge trousers. Half-eaten walnuts and torn bits of paper and cloth, the work of a nest of squirrels, littered the entire bottom of the compartments of the old oaken receptacle. A piece of wallpaper, which the Walnut Town men said covered the skeleton, lay beside the chest. But there was no skeleton, no evidence of any bones, nor decayed flesh, which the hunters said was there when they saw it. Another chest in an adjoining room was searched. It was empty. Except for a broken bottle and pieces of wood, the entire second floor revealed nothing. Spiderwebs, abandoned birds' nests, bits of broken window panes, and an old iron hook added an uncanny touch to the surroundings. When the upper floor failed to reveal the skeleton, the trooper and his party searched the bottom floor. An old squeaky door swung open into a dusty closet. A man's shoe, long since discarded, laid on the floor. A broken cask, bound in reed, was toppled over on its side. Lying in one corner of a room on the first floor was an old wire file holding invoices and letters dating back to 1897, in the name of Edward T. Wink, former owner of the place, residents about there say. The place is still owned by his estate, police claim. Search of the grounds surrounding the house revealed nothing but a tumbled-down spring house, an old, partly filled well, and one deep one, without covers, into which Trooper Logan almost plunged while tramping through the heavy underbrush. All about the house, trampled weed substantiated reports that others had visited the place since the Walnut Town hunters made their weird discovery. I believe the men are telling the truth and really believe they saw what they thought was the skeleton of a child, said Logan. But what could have become of it since they were here 2 weeks ago? If it was a skeleton, then the party who placed it in the chest became alarmed after the men's report became public and decided to remove the bones before police reached the scene. Then again, it may be that in their excitement, the imagination of the hunters carried them off, and what appeared to be the frame of a human body in the dim light of the log house was only the stuff which we found in the chest yesterday. When three of the four men, after several hours of questioning last night, still maintained that they could not have been mistaken, state police decided to have one of the hunters go with them to the mystery house and examine the chest under more favorable light. From Frank Greeby, tenant on the Edward Mertz farm several squares from the mystery house, it was learned that several parties of hunters visited the house since the Walnut Town hunters were there 3 weeks ago. Greeby said he did not know who the people were, but that they asked permission to cross his farm and getting to the favorite hunting grounds. Today, State Trooper Logan will question the writer of a partly burned letter dated July 16, 1925, which was found in the cellar of the log house during the search yesterday afternoon. This letter, he points out, shows someone visited the house after the first visit by the Walnut Town residents. The recipient's name was burned off, but the writer's name and address remained.
Someone just had a key, unlocked the door, and never heard from again.
Did someone read the first article, get scared, and run there before the police could get there and get those bones out of there?
That, to me, would seems the obvious thing.
The other option is even creepier, though.
That someone else wanted them.
Someone saw those hunters go in there from the woods or from some other position.
Uh-huh.
And they knew what was in there. Someone who put those bones in there, perhaps.
Or they could tell something had been moved.
And they knew they had to get them out of there. Because someone had seen them. Like, that's a even creepy. I mean, either one's creepy. But that one, to me, that idea is even creepier. Because that means those bones could have disappeared any time in those, what was it, 2 weeks or something before they told the police.
Mm-hmm.
Any time in there, those bones could have disappeared. The fact that they printed the story
before they went to
the
investigate.
The fact that the police didn't go out immediately. Immediately.
Like, or the fact that this happened during the time when they're missing Jenny.
Well, yeah, we'll get to that. Like, that's a whole other thing. But the fact that the police didn't go out there immediately before they go to the press. Because the police, I'm assuming, fed the story to the press, not the hunters.
Yeah, because one of the hunters called the police.
Right.
Yeah.
So, before you go to the press, before you tell your buddy, Jim, the reporter for Reading News or whoever it is, go out there and retrieve those bones, buddy. Like, this is a big failing to me. But, again, maybe they were gone already. And if they were gone from some other agency, before that appears in the newspaper, that means someone either saw those hunters go in there, someone who knew those bones were there.
Or they heard tell through the town.
Or, like you said, they could tell someone had been in there and the stuff was disturbed. They said you could see fingerprints in the dust
mm-hmm.
on the red chest
mm-hmm.
where someone opened. Now, was that from the hunters opening or was it, you know, from...
Yeah, and how often does it get opened?
Right, right. To me, the idea that someone went in there and they didn't take the chest. They cleared the bones out.
Yeah, they kept the chest. They took the bones.
Yeah, they left the... And they just... The bones are gone. So these bones are gone. But these hunters are definite. You know, they know what they saw. I totally believe them. They're not going to make up a story. Why'd you make up a story to potentially get you in trouble?
Mm-hmm. You know? I think that they sat on it and had discussions about it. And they decided they weren't going to tell anybody about it. They were going to just leave well enough alone. I mean, I think that would be a very sort of...
Yeah. But I think also, if one of them ends up telling, I think you get haunted.
Yeah. I think you get haunted. And then I think you read that a little girl goes missing. And
yeah.
you think...
Maybe.
Now there's... Yeah.
Yeah.
So now we're placing the deaths of two children under the age of 3.
Right.
In suspicious context.
Right.
Within a 10-mile period.
Now, and these hunters said the bones look older, but, I mean, bones are bones.
And they were really, I mean, they never had a chance to even use the most primitive forensics to figure out how old they were.
So we don't know how old the bones were in the chest. We just know they were of a child, possibly a baby, possibly a toddler, someone in the range of Jenny's age.
Mm-hmm.
10 miles away. The only reason you found out about it is because the proximity of the article to the article in Jenny. It was right beside it in the paper.
And no one said, isn't it weird that in a town of like 400 people, we've had 2 suspicious deaths of toddlers in the past?
Like, right. Yeah. Like all of a sudden, we got dead babies turning up.
Yeah.
Do we want to connect these in any way? At least,
I mean, I know they didn't watch like crime shows on TV. There's even like access to like psychological profiling. That's all way down the road.
Right.
But just someone with a little bit of a inquisitive mind, I think, can put together, hey, it's really odd in this area to have something like this happen once in 100 years, but now it's happened twice in the same week.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, even if the other one happened before, the discovery of it is in the same week. They're not making these connections, at least as far as we know.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there's some young buck detective down at the police station who's like, hey, guys, look, there's 2 dead kids here. Maybe we need to check this out. And then the boss is like, Charlie.
Oh, it's better to leave well enough alone. These people know how to take care of their own.
And this is Dryville. What are you thinking?
Let's close ranks and never do anything. Let's forget the bad thing happened and soldier on.
I think I get extra pay for the old-timey voice. I was not...
You know, and generic old-timey voices, I just...
Well, that is how cops used to talk.
Right, see? We got 2 dead kids, see?
I'm sure they're unrelated, see?
Oh, man.
It's probably the gypsies. Did you check the gypsy camp?
Shake down the gypsies. This skeleton is super creepy to me. Like, that whole thing with the skeleton in the cabin is so creepy.
And the letters. So there's one letter.
So we didn't discuss the letters.
They find the one letter. Which links it to the person who owns the house, which is Edward Wink.
But when they come back, there's the other letter in the basement that's been burned.
Yes.
Somebody. Now, again, what are the chances... 2 people came back into this abandoned cabin, one to get the bones and one separately for some other reason to burn a letter in the basement, right? Like,
why not take it with you and burn it somewhere else?
I have no clue.
Do you
the
think
whole
it's just
thing
like
feels
a,
like a ritual.
Yeah.
The whole thing feels like the 3 chests in the attic.
Yeah.
The burning of the letter in the basement, the one chest painted red, it feels like a ritual. This feels like something that meant something to someone. This location meant something,
mm-hmm.
whether they lived there or for whatever reason. This location meant something to them.
Mm-hmm.
The red chest meant something.
Probably. Now you know what I was thinking.
What?
And this is wild beyond wild speculation with no physical facts to back it up.
It's strange familiars. You got to go for
familiars.
It.
The Hollenbachs had 7 children, 4 of which were living at the time that
right.
Jenny goes missing. 3 had died previously, unaccounted for. How many chests were up there?
There were 3. That's kind of creepy.
Yeah. There's
yeah,
no...
That's just... But the number 3, the red painted chest, even that layer of wallpaper, it feels very ritually, you know, like you're sealing it in.
Or like you're taking a piece of the home.
Possibly, yeah.
And they said there were remnants of fabric in with it. And
right.
I don't know if that's something that the child was wearing. They allude to the bones being 20 years old.
Right.
But
and
they don't have
guess,
any... Yeah, they don't, I think that's because...
And this burning of something in the basement, like...
A letter with, like, so the return address is burnt on that one, right? So they couldn't see who it was from.
No, they saw who it was from, but they couldn't see who it was written to. And they were going to, the last thing they say in the article is they're going to contact whoever wrote this letter, and they didn't say who it was. I don't know why they kept that information out of the paper. They gave everything else.
Everything else away.
Yeah, But and then there's nothing else about that we know of. Like maybe some.
Yeah, and you know everybody in that area knows exactly where that cabin is.
Oh yeah.
They probably go hunting there all the time. Everybody knows so and so's farm.
Well, the owner of the property near it said people had asked for permission to cross his lands because they were good hunting grounds wherever this cabin was. But I'm thinking, if you're sneaking in to take bones, you're not asking permission. You're not leaving a record.
No, and you know what time to go in there.
You know what, yeah, yeah.
So here's the interesting thing. I tried to make a physical connection between either the Beams or the Hollenbachs with the people that owned that house, and their last name was Wink. And I did find that Floyd had an uncle by marriage whose name was Wink, but not related to the Wink family who inherited
that property.
However, it is a small area, and they have the same last name. I can't imagine that they are unaware of one another.
Right.
That's
interesting. I wish that cabin was still there. I'd really like to get my eyes on that. But like we said, it's...
Yeah, because they offer this really, like, I get a very clear mental picture. Not in, like, some sort of psychic terms, but in a very detail-rich kind of mental picture of them walking up these broken stairs. And they're thinking... Hey, maybe somebody stashed some money in here. You know that's what the hunters are thinking. Like, let's just figure this...
Anything.
Yeah, let's see what's in this place.
Yeah.
And then
I think we even mentioned they were shooting groundhogs in the basement.
Yeah. So it's definitely not a place that was used as a homestead in any kind of real capacity.
No, and if they're shooting stuff in the basement, if you're checking back on this in any kind of regular way, then you will, like, that would be... disturbance. You would notice that disturbance, I would think. So
I'm thinking that the only way that you could secret away a body in a chest for years and years and years is if you knew who owned the place, or you owned the place.
Probably, or you just knew enough about it where
you knew it was abandoned.
Remote enough where people don't
or
go
you
in
live
there.
Next door to it.
Exactly. Somehow you can keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
I mean, my feeling is that, like I said, it's a very ritualistic thing. People came back here often to this place. Whoever put those bones there came back somewhat
often.
And
it could be in a much more benign way than where we're thinking.
It could be. No, it absolutely could be.
Yeah, I think it could be a mother who just couldn't part with a child.
Exactly. It could have been there's people who couldn't afford burial services or for whatever reason. You know, it's a bizarre thing to do. It's a bizarre thing to do, but maybe... You know, maybe it was something like that. Maybe it wasn't that nefarious. And that's why, you know, when I say ritual-like, I mean, I don't necessarily mean like an occult kind of ritual. I mean like... It could be a very personal ritual. Like you said, the wallpaper could just be... Maybe it was wallpaper from the baby's room or something, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe there was some meaning to that. You know, I was thinking like it was a kind of sealing it in. It was like another aspect of the ritual.
Or you could open the... You could open the container but not see it all the time.
Right. Yeah. You knew it was there. Yeah. It just feels like such a ritual thing to me.
Yeah, because why wouldn't you, even if you had a body that you were checking on that was in there like that, why wouldn't you put like a heavy blanket or something over top of it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, it's just...
Yeah, there's something there.
I don't know. I'm like, to try to speculate on...
But it does feel more nefarious with the burning of the letter. And all that, you know what I mean?
I just don't know why even in those days you wouldn't get rid of any. Unless you're just there in the middle of the night just trying to get rid of stuff.
Maybe. I don't know. I feel like it was like a...
It has this element of like a... Almost like your own personal... You know, like in every kind of cliche... serial killing movie where you go in and they've got like the shrine room.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's what I'm thinking of. Like you know.
Yeah. This is very between like some sort of like manhunter meets like.
Yeah. I want to know if the chests were on the east wall. These are the questions we'll never have answers to. Like, were they on the east wall? Were they facing east?
Were all the boxes made at the same time? Did they have symbols on them?
Were they spaced out in any special way? You know, was it, you know.
In my
mind,
was
the red one in the middle, and there was
like amazing, like Berks County, Pennsylvania Dutch painting on the side of them with like all the kind of just like quintessential Pennsylvania Dutch iconography on the side of them, but they were probably just some old chests. They might have just been there anyway.
like the with the Hexenfuss or whatever, the witch's foots. like nailed up in the on the on the rafters and stuff,
and just like hidden underneath boards were Himmel's briefs and
exactly all this witchy stuff, just all around, which they either didn't notice or just was everywhere in every rural place at that time. So,
Leftover Victorian hair work hanging on the wall, made out of the flowers of the hair of the child.
It came up in the Strange Familiars Gathering group. Paul Buscini, he's a patron and all that, he had put up a post that he had gotten a copy. He's in the UK, but he had gotten a copy of The Long Lost Friend, and he put up a post about it, and I noticed that it said John George Homan, Alsace Township, near Reading, and we looked it up, and it's just not that far.
It borders. Like, the border of Alsace Township is basically right on the corner of where one of the towns where the Hollenbachs lived for a while.
Yeah, so it's like, what do we say, like 5 miles or something?
Yeah, maybe.
It's not terribly far.
It's like the font of powwow.
Yeah. So all this stuff we're talking about, like, it literally, like, lives right there. Like, Homan lived right there. Now, 100 years before. Uh-huh. But he was right there. And there's this, like, this is deep in the heart of powwow country, you know. So the stuff we're talking about with the Himmel's brief and the witch's feet, witch's foot, if there's more than one, witch's feet.
I don't know. What is it with Bigfoot? Let's just use the same vernacular.
Well, there's an argument about that. People have tried to establish the plural of Bigfoot as Bigfoots and Big Feet, both of which...
I think it should just be Bigfoot singular again, that's, right? Just like deer, right?
All right. I insist on that. Mm-hmm. Other people insist the plural is Bigfoots or Big Feet. Both of them
sounds awful. Ridiculous.
Yeah, Bigfoot, big deer. Exactly.
And maybe as a quick aside for people who don't live in this area, we could just touch on what powwow is. And I know we've talked about it probably before in Strange Familiars, but it's just a folk tradition of healing, very, very akin to just a faith healing.
It's folk magic, but it's tied in with, it's very much of a faith healing tradition. It's a folk magic tradition. The three main books for it were The Long Lost Friend, Egyptian Secrets, which is attributed to Albertus Magnus. And each one of these books gets progressively a little more occulty. Long Lost Friend shares a lot with Egyptian Secrets. But there's some more, like some deeper kind of occulty stuff in Egyptian Secrets. And if you were dark and edgy and you were into powwow, you had the 6th and 7th books of Moses. A lot of times they were the hex, what they would call a hex or a witch. If you had the 6th and 7th books of Moses, they were the evil, they were the bad books.
But I think that for the vast majority of people who practiced this, it was sort of like just sort of a basic necessity. This is what the people that did this became. They were like the default primary care physicians.
They were the wise the wise men and cunning women.
Yeah,
in the
for
village.
People who couldn't afford medical care.
Certain authors who have published books with little moons on the spine have claimed the powwow tradition as some kind of secret passing down of Wiccan beliefs through the centuries or something.
No. It's a passing, it's a familial passing of knowledge, but it's grounded in religion.
The folk music, the folk magic roots of this go back. There is paganism in it. If you go back far enough.
Just like there is in Christmas.
Right, exactly. But this is, the people who were doing this, for the most part, would have identified as Christians, as religious people. This was faith healing. It was done in concert with prayer, etc., etc. Now, the dark side of that is that some of what is in The Long Lost Friend is how to protect yourself from witches, how to find witches, and how to kind of turn witches' curses back on them. And the thought in the general populace was, if you can do that, if you can find witches and turn their curses on them, well, you can also curse people. So a lot of times these powwow doctors got accused of being witches themselves and so forth. So this would have been woven into the culture up there. All of this. Does that lay the groundwork further? This being more of a ritual situation, you know, in this cabin. I don't know. I'm just going with, like, gut feeling feels ritually to me.
I wish we had access to someone who was, you know, had some psychological, real as opposed to speculative psychological expertise in this regard, who could talk about when they find cold cases like this in such a manner, what does that usually mean? Is there a pattern there? Right. Does that usually point to a family member? Does that usually point?
Well, that's a good point. Let's talk about what we know and likely suspects and et cetera, et cetera.
I think most of the time when a child goes missing, unfortunately, it turns towards the family.
Yeah. Jerry, another listener, another regular. Don't know if he wants me to say his last name. He knows I'm talking about him. he was on, he talked about the weird lights he saw in Iceland. So he's been on the show before. Jerry pointed that out as well several times. That's his big issue with the missing 411 stuff. He says that
there's an obvious explanation for a lot of it.
That and the fact that most often, and sadly, he has pointed out several times, it is the family. Mm-hmm. It's someone in the family. That's really uncomfortable, and it really hurts to talk about. Mm-hmm. Especially in these, like if it was me, if I was writing the missing 411 books, and you know, I might write a missing person's mm-hmm. book at this point, because the people who are writing missing people books are now writing historical Bigfoot books, so why not? It's certainly easier to talk about some kind of supernatural other or this mysterious undescript thing than accuse families, you know? That's an uncomfortable and a sad thing. But
and I think that's where a lot of, in my mind, paranormal phenomenon exists. It's easier to think of a third-party boogeyman that's or a fiend, which is what the family said, a fiend took her. Mm-hmm. It's easier to think that the fiend is from the outside than the fiend within.
Yeah, if you're going on averages.
I don't get that impression.
I don't either. I feel, and this is all based on gut feelings from
there's no
100 years into the future.
We have no evidence whatsoever. But I think of it in terms of if I'm presented with the evidence and I'm a juror in an imaginary case of my own design, what seems likely to me, and then talk with other people and see what seems likely to them. I don't get the impression that the family was involved.
I feel like if you do that, if you disappear your own child, you don't bring them back.
No.
Spoiler alert, Jenny's body is found, and we'll get to the details of that next episode. But I don't think you bring the body back then for someone to find. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, like, either you keep it in a chest somewhere in a cabin you go and visit.
Yeah, a chest painted red. Yeah,
you either do that or you get rid of the evidence and you just keep looking for the real killer.
Yeah, right. But we don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, so family, you know.
I don't know who amongst the family I would suspect. It doesn't make sense.
It seems odd. The dad was working somewhere else. The mom was working.
Her sisters
people
are there.
Did see her out on the road. Yeah, it seems odd that the mom or the dad, presumably her sisters weren't much older than her. Presumably it's not them.
Yeah. You know?
It seems odd that the mom or the dad would run from whichever fields they're working in to go ahead and do this and that. You know,
it just doesn't make sense.
Right. We've got Floyd Hollenbach as a possible suspect.
There's, and at this point, there's absolutely nothing linking him other than the fact that he used to live at the house.
And he was in jail and escaped.
Yeah, and there's weird disappearances.
Right.
I would also put maybe the last person to legitimately see her, who was an adult, who would be the uncle of Emma, who was driving the machine,
car.
Who told a not quite two-year-old to just get off the road.
Right.
That's a little curious to me. I would also, there's also some suspects coming up. In the way that her body's found, I think I would put those people on the list as
just
well.
Just people, like
people of
persons
interest.
Persons of interest.
Persons of interest.
Yeah.
You know, when you cast guilt on someone without them having any kind of...
Right. Don't leave town.
Yeah.
Look, see? Don't leave town.
We got our eye on you, see? But not really. We think we might just close ranks and try to get on with life.
You know there was a Barney Fife up there. Oh, you know it. Like...
Yeah, ready to use that one bullet that someone else kept for him. Like, we'll find this guy.
Yeah, you know there was in that department. So other than casting this wide net of possible suspects, and of course Floyd's father, who we feel less guilty about.
Because
he was a bad guy. I mean,
yeah, like if you go to jail because of something that your kids bring up against you, I feel like you're
a bad guy.
Like, you're a bad guy. Yeah,
we can comfortably say he wasn't a nice human being.
Yeah,
I think throw him in the mix. You know, these are people that we're not saying they're guilty. These are just people that we would talk to if we were the police officers. We'd want to talk to. Yeah, I think I'd really want to talk to that guy who was driving that car.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's a different time. But I want to talk to the guy who tells a not even 2-year-old, hey, get out of the road.
This is someone who probably can't answer back at this point. I mean, I just think about our kids when they were 2 years old, you know, they were just learning how to talk and she wasn't even quite 2 yet.
Yeah.
She couldn't say, okay, I'll go back to my mommy or can you help me? Was she upset? Was she crying? Was she just walking? I just don't think a child goes that far without looking back to see where her mom, her sisters,
I mean,
her house, her dog
is. It happens occasionally, you know, but
the grandparents are adamant that a fiend has taken her.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that is based on the fact that perhaps they knew that she was taken.
Well, maybe it's a whole different kind of fiend. We'll talk about that on the Patreon episode. Thanks for listening to Strange Familiars, everybody. The articles we presented in this episode, in order, were from the Reading Times, March 31st, 1919, the Daily News from Northumberland, Pennsylvania, April 16th, 1925, the Reading Times, August 3rd, 1925, and August 4th, 1925. Our newsreader is Sarada. The music for the Broken Circle episodes is by Buell Kazee. Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Holler Arts, music, books, art, podcasts, and more. DarkHollerArts.com. If you're on Facebook, like the Strange Familiars page, and you can join the Strange Familiars gathering group and interact with other listeners and keep updated on different news and some behind-the-scenes stuff. Intro music is by Stone Breath. Go to stonebreath.bandcamp.com for more.
Being cold and clear,
and she saw her three little babes come running home to her. She set a table both long and wide, and on it she put bread and wine. Come eat, come drink, my three little babes. Come eat, come drink of mine. We want none of your bread, mother. Neither do we want your wine. For yonder stands our Savior dear, and to him we must resign. Green grass grows over our heads, mother. Cold clay is under our feet, and every tear you shed for us, it wets our winding sheet.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.